Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hold hands and close your eyes. It's 12:30, and you're listening to the Ghost Story Pass.
Welcome to the Ghost Story, guys. I'm Brennan Storr.
I'm Paul Bestel.
And this is a show where we talk about spooks, specters, and all the other things watching us from the shadows beyond the campfire. Some conversations only make sense after the sun has set, and this is most definitely one. Thanks for tuning in. This is episode number 107, and we're coming to you from that tiny mountain cabin you dream about but can never quite reach. How are you, Paul?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm trying to get over the disappointment of neither of us making the 100 sexiest bald men in the world, but life moves on, doesn't it?
You will forever be number one sexiest bald man in my heart, my friend.
Ditto.
Aw. I, too, am disappointed. However, I am buoyed somewhat by the fantastic set of stories we got coming up, a mixture of found stories and listener stories that really kind of deals with strange intruders and these things which sort of appear and leave us with absolutely no idea of what's happened. And certainly some of the stories we have are even more vague and sort of anomalous than what we would usually have. You know, there's some one that's kind of like a flaming blue hoop that is quite sinister. But we'll get there, of course. I will say for my part, in addition to dealing with the aforementioned disappointment, I am dealing with seasonal allergies that currently have me hating my face. Because, listeners, you might hear it, my voice is last couple episodes has been a little more hoarse than usual. And it's just because I am more or less sneezing constantly. You know, it is hell. And our neighborhood, we have, or I should say in Victoria, they have a bunch of these cherry blossoms. Mm. And they all bloom at different parts of the spring. So ours haven't even bloomed yet. And already I am, like I said, I'm a mucus factory. It's a horrible, horrible thing.
Mm.
I know, right? Yes, you really tune into the show to hear those words.
It's a wonderful image.
It truly is. It actually reached a point, because we're re-recording this segment. We had to re-record it, because the first time I had taken allergy meds before recording, and I started to fall asleep. This is an ineffective way to conduct a podcast. I have learned.
Well, you say they were allergy tablets. Who knows?
That's right. Yeah, yeah. I took a couple tabs of acid. Actually.
Yeah, well, I'd take them back to your dealer if they were making you fall asleep, because that's not the kind of acid I'm aware of.
Well, it's funny because I was actually contacted by a friend of mine recently who, we shall say, is a retailer. Yeah, he's in retail. He's in retail.
Yes.
And he said to me, apropos of nothing, he said, just so you know, I've got a couple sheets left of this really high quality acid. From a guy in blankety blankety blank. And there are these legendary figures in BC who create this stuff, but apparently are very hard to find. And so if you can get a hold of some of their stuff, then, you know, you are in possession of quite a thing. And so my friend was just very kindly saying, hey, I've got this thing, this rare thing. And if you would like to have some, it's a really good deal. And I mean, I love the guy. But it was kind of like getting a chain email from a store you haven't bought anything from. Like, no, I don't. No, thank you. No, I don't. I trust the guy. I trust the provenance of it. I trust it to be as good as he says it is. But I've never, ever tried such a thing. And I feel like with my fucked up brain, the last thing I need to do is set it free out into the cosmos.
Yeah, you'll end up like Homer Simpson when he eats that chili. And
yeah, I was going to say that at best, I'll end up with a talking coyote voiced by Johnny Cash. At best. At worst, I'll end up imprisoned in my own mind like the man in the Iron Mask.
Yeah, or that strange woman in Florida who was found stuck in a storm drain.
Or that. A combination of those things, I think, is probably most likely. In better news, however, last week I turned 38, so I am on my way to the big 4-0, Paul. You're gonna have to help me through this midlife crisis.
I would, but I had mine at 27, so I'm not really sure where you go from here. But welcome. You're getting closer to joining the real club, but it's one of those things I've never really been bothered about age. I think the only time I was really kind of stressed about any particular age was turning 18.
Really? It's turning 18?
Yeah, I've never been bothered about turning 20 or 21, 30, 40 anyway. But
40 plus.
Yeah. As certain people keep pointing out that it, anyway, we'll not dwell on that. But I don't know. I know some people get really hung up about turning 40 and stuff. And to be fair, I think these days, it's not like when you watch films from the 60s and you see people who are 40 and they look like they're 86. you know.
It's funny you say that because Nick and I just watched Night Moves, this really fantastic, almost like a neo-noir from 1975 with Gene Hackman.
Mm.
And his character in that film is 40. And Paul, he looks like my grandfather. I kind of looked at myself in the mirror and I'm this, you know, kind of soft creature. And then there's Gene Hackman who looks like the giants of old. And I think, Jesus Christ, they built people different back then.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to be said for living on lard and alcohol.
That's what I was doing until I hit 30. They told me to stop and I wasn't going to make it to 40. But maybe they lied. Maybe I would have just gotten to look like Gene Hackman.
No, it is something I've been very aware of for quite a while. When I see, because you know I love to watch really obscure, weird old documentaries, especially from the 70s.
And one of the many things I admire about you.
Yeah, thank you. And everybody in the 70s looks really old.
When I was a kid, they had all the graduating class photos in the lobby, like the main hall of our high school.
Mm.
And looking at the graduating photos for classes from the 70s and 80s was like looking at a mugshot book. Everyone had like three teeth and six kids in the photo with them. They had full beards. You know, some of them were drawing pension checks. I don't know what it is. They were hard people. And I mean, sure, living in a small town, a small logging town, no less, was a rough deal back in those days. But man alive, I don't know if they all got dumped on the Lord of the Flies island when they turned a certain age. And then they just came out looking like they'd been left in the sun too long. I don't know. So it's been a weird week, Paul. But it's been a good week. And aside from the sneezing, and again, the hoarseness, please excuse me, audience. It has been all right. And speaking of all right, it's time to thank our patrons.
This one's for the patrons.
Patrons, you are the wind beneath our wings. You guys allow me to focus on the show exclusively, make lots of cool patron stuff for you guys, music shows, but we're not going to talk about that now. If you want to hear about what you get as a patron, I'm going to talk about that at the end of the show. For now, we're just going to thank our newest patrons, who are Shelby McInnes,
Lauren Michaud,
Emma,
Stefan Lynn,
Julie Yates,
Amy Ryder,
Misty Jones,
Catherine Teal,
and Kay Smith. Thank you so, so much from the bottom of our terrible, terrible hearts. And again, listen to the end of the show if you want to find out how to join the team. Finally, before we head to the break, we have another musical guest on this episode. They are the LA-based pop-punk band Fears of Abandonment. And I am a really big fan of these guys' sound. I spent my early 20s listening to a lot of punk, you know, a lot of Bad Religion, Dropkick Murphys. And so Fears of Abandonment and their album L'Appel du Vide, which translates Call of the Void, really kind of hits that sweet spot for me of this sort of like furious, punky nostalgia.
Hmm.
So I hope you folks like it as much as I do. The track we're going to be playing on the show is called Perfect on Paper. And you can find Fears of Abandonment anywhere you stream your music, or you can pick up the album on iTunes. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Stories of Strange Intruders.
When I was young, things, they were so much fun. There was love in the air, and I felt I belonged.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome back. As we mentioned on this episode, we're going to be telling stories of strange intruders, including the devil in the back seat. But before we do, we've got some feedback from you folks, and we thought we'd share it here. Of course, if you want to send us an email, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com is a way to do it. We're on Instagram as TheGhostStoryGuys, and Twitter and Facebook, of course, just as GhostStoryGuys. So first up, we have a message from Big John Stud S.A. He's commenting on the Animal Ghosts episode, and he says, "Here in San Antonio, Texas, we have the Riverwalk. There are stories through the years of ghost fish and swans in the downtown area, that people feeding the fish at the restaurants lining the river would see transparent fish that would eat the food, but would not be able to grab it. And one story is of a black swan seen in the waters to disappear at a second glance." So that's pretty cool. Thank you, John. We talked a little bit on the Animal Ghosts episode about how many of these stories there are in the wild, particularly stories of ghost fish, and there you go.
Okay, this next story is from Misty. "My only claim to be in touch with the paranormal is in 2003. My ex had passed away in a house fire. The night that he passed away, I had a dream that he and I were having lunch, and he was telling me that he would always be there for me. Next thing I know, my phone is ringing, waking me up, and it was my best friend calling me to let me know that he and his brother were killed in a house fire. Keep up the good work. And I love, love, love your voice."
It is a very sexy voice, Paul.
Oh, well, as long as you know it's about your voice, that's fine.
I tell you, with all this crap in my throat right now, it does not sound very sexy. To me, it sounds like a number of small animals being tortured. It is a deeply unpleasant sound. But thank you so, so much, Misty. And thank you for sharing. I'm even though that is some time ago, I know these things can still be painful, and so I appreciate you taking the time to share that with us. Next up is from our patron Tara, and Tara says, "I typically listen to your podcast at work or walking my dog, but I had to hit pause on the doppelganger episode until I could give full attention to it. The portion about the harvesters, workers, and the land gives me absolute chills. I grew up and my family still lives in a part of Northern California that is primarily agriculture and farmland. The stories I heard growing up from family who worked these lands, along with many, many friends that owned them, were fascinating and frightening at the same time. I definitely feel like there's an imprint that's left on this land after so many people have lived and died working here, many of whom migrated from Mexico and their families never knew what came of them. I have numerous unexplained stories and experiences from having lived there for so long, if you're ever interested." And Tara, the answer is always. If you've had a strange experience, we always want to hear about it. GhostStoryGuys@gmail.com. And I always say this, it's true. We read everything that's sent in. And even though we don't respond to everybody, we do read everything that's sent. If you're a patron, of course, you'll get a response. But otherwise, we just get back to as many people as we can. But I know Bob, who sent us that story that Tara is talking about from episode 106, he also has some land up in Northern California, I believe. And Bob, you can correct me if I'm wrong. But I seem to recall him saying there's mojo up that way, too. And so it seems to be a very powerful part of the state. You know, we talk a lot about sort of the L.A. on the show, but Northern California has real mojo to it.
Very much. I mean, it is probably a very untapped paranormal field, I would suggest, without wishing to sound like I'm making a pun.
You might be onto something. I don't know if there's much literature on that area. I know a friend of a friend recently sort of asked her to ask me about an area in BC called the Headless Valley, and I'm not familiar with it at all. But apparently it's full of paranormal activity, and again, I have to wonder how many of these little pockets of high strangeness are out there just sort of waiting to be investigated or explored.
Definitely. Our next contribution comes from Amaya via Instagram. "I just had the craziest thought, and I figured I'd share. So I've been wondering why with some ghosts you can only see their face. Some you can only see their top half, and some ghosts you can see their whole body. I came to the conclusion that what if the part of the ghost that you can see is the part that has fully decomposed of the dead body. That's why with people who have died a long time ago, it's more common to see their whole body. I don't know. It's just a thought. Thanks for being a kick-ass podcast.
Oh, thank you for listening, Amaya. And, hey, that's as good a theory as any. I like to say that if anyone ever tells you they know for sure why something is happening in this field, they're full of shit. And so that is as valid a theory as any, and it's worth considering. Thank you so much, Amaya.
Yeah. I always like a random piece of anatomy as a ghost, like a random hand or leg.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And nothing else.
It will no doubt surprise you that those were not the first things that popped into my mind, but yes.
Well, yes, I'm clearly coming from a classical British haunting aspect.
Oh, of course, yeah, yeah, with class and taste and distinction, and I am a barbarian at the gates. All right, next up is from Sharon. She quotes, "Boy, I bet the mountains are done with me. The mountain cannot hear your safe word and is not interested." And that's a reference to our previous episode, I believe that was 106. And Sharon says, "I just wanted to say that along with your talent for photography, I appreciate your hilarious turns of phrase. Carry on, my friend." And thank you, Sharon. And thank you very much. It's tough. When I'm putting this together, I think, well, that's kind of overly complimentary to me. I don't really want to be that guy. But at the same time, I want you to know I do hear it and I do appreciate it. So thank you. Hear that, Paul? I'm a genius. She pretty much said that. If you look down, if you read all the letters in a certain diagonal pattern in the email, and then you rearrange them, and you add a couple, it spells out genius.
The way I'm reading it, it says you are Zodiac, but anyway.
I'm not Ted Cruz's dad.
Next up, we have a contribution from Michelle. "I wrote a few days ago with some stories and had something happen while listening to your podcast that I wanted to share. I have been binging the show on Spotify, which acts weird sometimes when I am listening. Sometimes it will play one episode after the next like it should. Others, at the end of an episode, it will jump back to the start of the list and play the Slender Man episode. No offence, but I'm getting tired of that episode and the Slender Man too."
Hey, I'm right there with you.
Yeah, me too. "Today, I was listening to episode 95, The Burning Child, while walking my dog around the neighbourhood. My phone was locked and in my pocket. One of the stories talked about the Randonautica app. I live in Maine and idly wondered what kind of locations the app would generate in my area. Just as I thought that, Spotify jumped to the Slender Man episode for a few seconds, then to episode 2, then episode 26, before I got my phone out of my pocket and unlocked. I had no real intention of going to any of the locations, but my curiosity would probably get the better of me. After getting back to the right episode, I thought, okay, I get the message. Do not download that app. Thank you so much for doing this show."
And thank you, Michelle. It's funny how many people have issues like that with Randonautica. You know, and for our listeners who don't know, Randonautica is a mobile app that claims to use some kind of, we'll say quantum something.
Magic.
Yes, more or less. To produce randomly generated points on a map. And the idea is that if you apply an intention to this thing while it's calculating, it will give you a location which in some way relates to the intention you had set for it. And we talked a lot about this last year because I used it quite a bit when I was first coming out of quarantine so I could kind of give myself places to walk that weren't just my usual routes. And a lot of people treat it like a Ouija board in their pocket. And I never really had that experience, but I know, I mean, obviously there were some teens in Seattle, I think, who found dead bodies in a suitcase.
Yep.
When they were playing around with it. So, I mean, you know, the potential for excitement is there.
Mm. Yeah, that is quite weird because those guys actually filmed the discovery.
Yeah, I think they put it on TikTok, of all things.
Yeah, well, why not? What if you're going to find some disembodied body parts, why not film it and upload it straight away? Yes.
If I want to juice our TikTok account, I'm going to have to start doing Randonautica and just going corpse, 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 corpse. As for the Spotify thing, it's funny, you know, we've heard from a few people that they've had issues with our show on Spotify, and I honestly don't know why that is. It drives me scatty. Spotify, I mean, I can't complain because we get a lot of traffic from Spotify. Hmm. But at the same time, yeah, I don't I don't know. I don't know why it does that. I know sometimes I'll go in there to, you know, check to make sure an episode has properly uploaded, or just to see how Spotify has mangled the formatting on the show notes. And quite often it'll take me to episode, for a long time I think it was 86, and now it's episode 70-something. It doesn't open to the top of the pile. It opens to the episode right in the middle.
Hmm.
I don't understand it. I'd like to blame demons, but I think it's probably something I'm doing with the files, although, you know, Christ knows what that is. So thank you again, Michelle. Thank you to everyone who wrote in. If you want to write in, tell us a little bit about your relationship to the show, or a story, or just a comment that you want us to possibly share in this segment. GhostStoryGuys@gmail.com is the way to do it. But again, you can also send me DMs on Instagram at TheGhostStoryGuys, or on Twitter as GhostStoryGuys, and Facebook as well. All right. Now it's time for the stories. The Thin Man. On the strangest night of my life, I was 15 years old, and woke up feeling as though I needed to make sure my parents were okay. Back then, we lived in a very safe Perth suburb, and someone breaking into our house seemed as remote a possibility as waking up to find our house on the moon. All the same, there I was at maybe 2 or 3 in the morning, bolt upright in the dark, feeling as though I needed to move fast. The house was still and silent as I walked down the hall to my parents' door, which swung open noiselessly. There my folks were, sleeping peacefully, and I was just about to dismiss the whole thing when I saw motion about a meter from their bed. When my eyes finally trained on it, I realized I was looking at a tall shadow in the shape of a man, but impossibly, uncomfortably thin. It didn't move, exactly, but repositioned itself as though it had become aware of my seeing it. Then a moment later, it disappeared. I bolted back to my room and dove into bed. Of course, a moment later, I discovered I was no safer there as I poked my head out from beneath the covers to see the thin man standing against the wall of my bedroom. The instant I laid eyes on the thing, it seemed to charge toward me. I wanted so badly to scream, but nothing in my body would move. It was as if I was having sleep paralysis, but while awake. As soon as he touched my bed, the thin man disappeared and I could move again. The rest of the night was spent downstairs on the couch watching the brightest television shows I could find. In the morning, I was the only one who had any idea what had happened. My family was completely ignorant and claimed to have slept well. The only indication I had that I might not be crazy was that Bonds, our cat, refused to enter either room for 3 full days after the thin man's appearance. And, you know, I just thought, why not start the show off with a bang? Let's start off with a charging shadow person menacing your parents.
Yes. Well, I'm, as always, Brennan, as I often say, I'm with the cat. And if it's good enough for the cat and the cat thinks something freaky's going on, something freaky's gone on.
The problem with that is I think then I start to put too much faith into the cat, because I'm at this point now where our cats are quite, I think they're just needy because of the pandemic, and they kind of pick up on our, you know, they pick up on your mental space to a little bit, or to a certain degree. But our cats will start whining in a room, and instead of just thinking, oh, they're just being cats and making noise, my first thought is, what are you seeing?
It's here.
Yeah, and you know, I saw this great tweet a couple days ago. This woman said, my cat kept headbutting my breast. And she said, I've read stories about cats being really good at detecting cancer.
Yes.
You know, like in its early stages. So she thought, oh, shit, I'm going to go see a doctor. And she said, yeah, so it turns out I'm fine, but my cat's a fucking pervert.
Well, strangely enough, last night I was fast asleep, and our latest cat.
Now, are you going to be confessing to a crime here, Paul? Just so I can make sure I'm recording it.
Not this week.
Disappointing.
And so I was fast asleep for one of our latest cat that's joined us, the rescue one that we took in at Christmas, decided to punch me in the eye at 3 in the morning.
I forgot. I got to Venmo her some cash.
Yeah. The night before that, I woke up to find her sat on my head.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So, yeah, that's good.
I mean, she either really likes you or she really doesn't.
No, she's stalking me and our other male cat, Pixie. Basically, she likes to watch him in the toilet, and she clearly likes to sit on my head while I'm asleep.
So there's another pervert cat is what's happening.
Yeah, this cat's a pervert as well. perchance to dream. Dreams are a funny thing. As kids we're taught they're like mini movies playing out in our mind, that we shouldn't waste any more time on them than it takes to shake them off in the morning. Sometimes, though, they demand more attention. Sometimes they have something to tell you. In my junior year of college, I was working as a waitress in a college town in the American Northeast. The money wasn't great, as you can imagine, but it was enough to supplement my loans, and that was all I needed. The cafe where I worked was a small family-owned business, and the owners were friendly enough. A little nuts, and known for making impulsive decisions, but kind. Usually, I worked Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday mornings, and the dream that changed the way I see the world happened on a Monday night. It was innocent enough. In the dream, I was on the train I usually take to work. Out of the window to my left, I could see my co-worker Amanda, dressed in a work shirt, and running to catch the door before it closed. Just before waking up, I remember looking down at my legs and seeing that for some reason, I was wearing a pink dress over my cords. Though what happened in the dream didn't amount to much, the intensity of it meant it stuck around long after a normal dream would have faded. When I arrived at the cafe, my boss Cheryl came over to tell me she'd had a brilliant idea and there was a surprise waiting for me in the back. Wanna guess what it was? A pink apron. She had bought them for everyone because she felt the cafe needed a little more pep. I put the apron on, looked down at my legs sticking out from underneath it, and it was as if my dream vision collided with reality. There was the pink dress I had dreamt about. All of a sudden, I felt very, very strange. Not long after that, Amanda arrived looking flushed and worn out and wearing, I couldn't help but notice, her work shirt. That was unusual, as usually she preferred to change into it once she got to the restaurant. I asked why she was so tired, and she explained that her alarm hadn't woken her up, so she'd just thrown on her work clothes on and run for the train. She said she'd barely made it before the doors closed, otherwise she'd have been late. So there it was. Two things I somehow dreamt about before they happened. Mundane things, sure, but impossible to predict. I suppose someone could argue probability, that these things coincided on a single day because of a random statistical probability. But I don't buy it. What I think is that there is more than one current of time, all moving in different directions, and dreams free us up to at least briefly see which way they're headed.
And I mean, that's more or less my take on dreams as well. I do think some dreams are kind of, yeah, they're just head movies, you know, really fucked up head movies. But I do think it's possible to also perceive things which would otherwise not be available to us. I mean, I myself have had, as I've mentioned on the show, you know, I had a dream a long time ago about being in Los Angeles by a freeway overpass and having these two police officers tell me, no, you can't go up ahead. There's this, you know, there's shooting happening. Some gang stuff is going on. You just can't go that way. And then years later, on my very first trip to Los Angeles, it was night. The only difference was it was nighttime. But I tried to get on the freeway and the cops said, nope, you got to go. There is a gunman up there and he is not happy. So I do think there's, you know, something to that. And I always love hearing when people have those experiences.
Mm. Yeah. I think it's the mundaneness of it that gives it a bit more oomph, as it were, because they're very normal, random things, fair enough, but they're very normal things that could happen. They're not, you know, like dreaming about the end of the world or winning the lottery. This is somebody almost missing a train and somebody getting a new outfit for work.
I think in a way too, the mundanity of it also, like this person says, gives the sort of the more skeptical a chance to say, well, you know, you're just, that's a part of your day that happens. You're going to dream about it. And statistically at some point it's going to come true. But yeah, I don't know. I don't buy that exactly. Yeah. I will say though, that for the latter half of this whole pandemic, I have had terrible goddamn nightmares and I deeply, deeply hope none of those are indicative of anything.
Well, yeah. Dreams and me are still having a very unusual relationship. So.
Oh, of course, because you didn't dream for like the first, 57 years of your life or whatever.
Yeah, I'm a new convert to the world of dreaming. I had a really crazy one the other night where I was living in a flat that seemed to have been attached to a giant shopping mall. And every day I would have to come down the stairs and sneak around the shopping mall because it was full of blind monsters that would chase me if I made any noise.
So you basically dreamed Dawn of the Dead?
Yeah, apart from they couldn't see me, they could only hear me.
Interesting. Which is, you know what's a crazy coincidence there is, the other night I watched the film The Driver,
yes,
which is about zombies who attack based on hearing.
Uh-huh.
At some point I'm going to be doing a guest spot on this podcast where they talk about certain actors' action movies. And so because the movie I've got to watch, there's actually not much to it. The actor only ever shot a couple days. It's the whole thing. But so I've been watching a lot of supplementary stuff so I can actually talk about other things. And among them are these two zombie films made by the same director. And in both of them, yeah, the zombies hunt by sound alone. So it's kind of interesting that you dreamed that while at the same time I was watching those movies.
Mm. There's a connection.
Which means I'm in your head, Paul, and I'm really sorry. I am so, so sorry. I hope that's all you start picking up on.
The modern day Aleister Crowley. There's something to look forward to. Brilliant.
Well, I am the worst person in the world, so, you know.
Oh, honestly, you can't bore me enough about Crowley. Honestly, what a boring buffoon that man was.
I know very little about him, but he's one of those guys. I feel like every circle of friends has one of these guys.
And what, he's a delusional wizard.
yeah, you know, in their own way, you know, and he's the kind of guy they don't invite him to parties, and then he'll just kind of swing by to see whether or not everyone's cars are there. And he'll be like, oh, shit, you forgot to call me. Oh, yeah, we called. You must not have got the text.
Yeah.
And he'll tell you about all the bullshit experiments he's doing and why he's actually, you know, he's not a failure. It's just that, you know, the dark forces are holding him back because of these rituals he's doing. And Jesus, he gets stuck next to him at a party. No, we've all met this guy.
Yeah, as we have a saying over here, if you see a dog with, we describe these people as the one-uppers that, if you've seen a dog with five legs running down the street, they've seen one with six that was juggling balls.
Oh, yeah. Yep. We call it two clowns here. If you've seen a clown, this guy, he's seen two clowns.
Yeah. Great guys.
Right? Well, at least Aleister Crowley's dead.
Or is he?
Yes.
Good.
The Devil in the Back Seat. And this story comes from our listener, Julie. Okay, so my parents each have one of these newspaper routes where they haul bundles of papers to carriers in different small towns around us. My mom's route is about 250 miles round trip, goes through six different towns, and takes about 5 to 6 hours to complete depending on the weather. They leave home about 11:30 p.m. For the last 3 weeks, my parents have been down a vehicle, so I'm doing my mom's route to help out. You've talked on the show about how some darks are darker and heavier. There's this one section of the route that goes through a small town called blank, and Julie's asked us to not tell people where she is, that is always dark. Can't see the side of the road even with the high beams dark. Even in town, the streetlights don't seem to cut through it much. I thought I was just imagining things until I heard you talk about it on the show. So I started paying more attention, and now I can tell you exactly where the extra dark starts and ends. I mentioned it to my mom, and she just said, I think they must just have older streetlights. Anyway, I hate driving this part of the route and try to get it done first so I don't have to think about it the rest of the night. It's not particularly scary, just uncomfortable. I don't scare easily. Most of the time. Tonight the papers dropped a little late, so I headed to blank as soon as I could, which was about 2:30 in the morning here. It seemed darker than ever, and there was a patchy fog to make it worse. I was driving down the completely empty highway in the middle of nowhere and was listening to episode 55 of GSG about haunted pubs when I started hearing a very faint, high-pitched whining noise. At first, I thought it was coming from the podcast, so I hit pause and it stopped. I thought that was weird because you guys hardly ever have bad audio. My husband is an audio guy, so I've learned to let even little things annoy me. Well, I've done that to my wife as well. And it's nice to know that we pass muster most of the time. And so I backed it up about 30 seconds to listen again, but there was no noise. I proceeded to rationalize. Maybe I hadn't sealed my pop properly and air was pushing through the bottle cap. A few seconds later, I heard the sound again, only the cap was off my bottle because I was taking a drink. Okay, I said, maybe it is the radio. So I checked the timestamp to be sure, backed it up 30 seconds, hit play, no sound. I gave up at this point because it was a very faint sound and didn't really matter. Another few miles go by, and it happens again, louder this time. I shut the radio off completely, and it happens again even louder, but still sounds like it's coming from the speakers. At this point, I'm not scared, just really annoyed and trying to figure out where the sound is coming from so I can make it stop. Now, I'm driving a quad cab pickup, but the dashboard display is pretty bright, and I can see the back seat pretty well, even in the extra dark. However, when I look back to see if I could find something to explain the sound, the back seat behind the passenger seat was pitch black. I couldn't even see out half the window. Then the sound happened again, super loud this time. I almost drove off the road. I yelled something like, "What the fuck? Stop it!" The sound stopped and didn't come back, but the atmosphere in the truck still felt heavy. I drove for a while, and then, feeling really dumb, yelled, "If there's anything in this car with me, you are not welcome, so get out." I was too scared to look in the back seat again until I pulled into the most well-lit parking lot I could find. The experience didn't quite leave me, though. When I finally got home, I was so shaken I had to leave the light on in our master bathroom and leave the door open until the sun finally came up. And I couldn't sleep until after my husband woke up and I was able to tell him what happened, with a lot of shaking and crying. Thankfully, he's not the kind of husband you usually get stories about. He's always believed me about these kinds of things, even though he's never had any kind of paranormal experiences himself. He says he can tell by how it affects me that something happened, and has no reason to believe I would make something like that up. So it must be true. I'm just going to pause here for a sec to say again how happy I always am when I get stories of supportive spouses in these situations, because yeah, we do get so many of the opposite. It is nice to hear that. And so I wrote Julie back, and I asked her how things were going, and she wrote in again about 12 days ago to update us after going on another late night work run. And so this is excerpted from her second email. She says, "As I was leaving, I wasn't thinking about what happened before. I was just intently listening to an audiobook. Then in the same spot, between the river and the feedlot, I faintly heard that high-pitched squealing again. The hair on the back of my neck stood up, and then the vehicle suddenly felt wrong, dark, and heavy. Like before, I had this feeling of dread in the pit of my stomach, and I knew it was in the car with me again. I was too terrified to turn my head to look in the back seat, so I just sat forward as far as I could and looked straight ahead. I told it again to leave and just prayed until the feeling finally left me. Thankfully, that was the end of my route, so I could just drive straight home. Now I'm sitting at my computer with all the lights on, waiting for the sun." And so, again, Julie, thank you very much for sharing that with us. That sounds really upsetting. And again, keep us updated. Let us know how it goes, because I know you mentioned that you're going to be doing this route for a little bit now. And so you are likely to, and having to pass this area on a semi-regular basis. And I don't envy you that whatsoever. But I've definitely had that happen to me. Years ago, actually not that long ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I was driving to Revelstoke. There's a town called Kamloops on the way. It's about maybe about 80, 90,000 people. I passed through that area at night. And just outside of Kamloops, especially if you're going east, there is a stretch of road that is extraordinarily dark. You know, Kamloops has a very unique energy all its own. It can be quite threatening at times. But this area outside of town is black as hell. And as I was passing through it, kind of going towards the town of Chase, I felt a cold breath on my neck, as though someone were sitting behind me in the car and breathing on me. And that road is really quite treacherous. It winds a lot. And again, at night, you know, you really got to watch yourself. And it was probably just my imagination, but it felt like something was back there and wanted me to turn around, because to turn around really would have meant crashing the car. There's no other option. It is just, again, such a treacherous road. You know, I know people who've been seriously injured on that road. And it was just, yeah, it was like it was trying to produce enough of a reaction, really for no reason other than to stir up shit.
Yeah.
But it was very, very uncomfortable. And so, yeah, Julie, again, let us know and keep in touch. And yeah, let us know how that goes.
There are quite a few stories from here in the UK of certain stretches of road where the very same kind of phenomenon seems to occur.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. A lot of people will be driving and then all of a sudden they feel a very heavy presence, or they refer to the atmosphere changing.
Right.
Some people mention that they suddenly feel really depressed and sad.
Interesting.
And then they get the sensation that something has sat in the back seat and they daren't turn around. They're terrified to turn around. One particular incident I was reading about the other day, because Ruth Roper Wild covers a few of these stories in her Roadmap of British Ghosts book.
Okay.
One of them, a gentleman was driving home from his partner's, I believe, and he was driving along a lane, and this very same kind of feeling happened to him, and he was absolutely petrified. He daren't turn around, and he was desperately driving, looking to get from this dark country lane to the lights. And just as he was about to get to the lights, the car engine died.
Oh, man.
But fortunately, he was on a hill. So obviously gravity sort of trundled the car along. And eventually, just as he came into the light, the atmosphere changed. The car started up, bump started, and he was able to carry on his journey. But there's several stories like that. Very peculiar. The rabbit. In 2010, the Darfield earthquake hit southern New Zealand. No one was killed, thankfully, but it still registered 7.1 on the Richter scale and exposed a previously unknown fault system, which is still being studied for what it can teach us about tectonics. Similarly, when I was a boy visiting my uncle in the Darfield area, I learned something about the natural world I'm still trying to understand years later. At the time I was 10 and had been sent to spend the summer with my aunt and uncle, who owned grazing land on the Canterbury Plains. My uncle David was a real outdoorsman, and so together we would often venture out on camping, hunting or fishing trips, during which he'd try to teach me about proper technique, firearm safety and the like. This one summer, Uncle David took me up to the This one summer, Uncle David took me up to the Rangitata River to go rabbit hunting. I'll do that again.
I mean, I don't know how it's pronounced either, so.
Rangitata. Yeah, that sounds better. Right. Yeah, he says, until we get a letter of complaint. How dare you say that, you English bastard.
I look forward to that day.
Brilliant. This one summer, Uncle David took me up to the Rangitata River to go rabbit hunting. Rabbits like to dig in sandy soil and hide in tall grass, which the banks of the Rangitata have in abundance. So off we set, me with my tutu and Uncle David with the bullets, because he's trusting but not stupid. It was a warm, clear day, and we had been walking upriver for hours, when I saw a rabbit and quietly pointed it out to David. He nodded permission, and I took aim before squeezing the trigger. Of course, I missed it completely, the rabbit darting into a stand of trees, so I gave chase. Approaching the trees, my blood was up, and I was a little crazy with the excitement of the hunt, when the air around me went quiet and still. If you'd have told me that I had been transported to the furthest reaches of the moon, I'd have absolutely had believed you. Something felt wrong. As I stood there in this strange, new, airless world, a furious voice rang out from everywhere and nowhere at the same time. It screamed, "What are you doing?" Even though I couldn't tell where it was coming from, I knew the voice was talking to me, and that it was about me trying to kill the rabbit for what amounted to no reason. I've never known anything like it, and it frightened me to my core. In total panic, I ran from the stand of trees, my lungs on fire, until I got back to Uncle David. He assumed my frantic state was because I'd become squeamish about killing the rabbit, and I suppose he was right, but not for the reasons he thought. Though Uncle David and I went on many trips after that, he never again asked me to go hunting, and I can't say I'm sorry.
I gotta tell you, I'm a meat eater, obviously, and I have fired guns a number of times. But I would be useless hunting because the notion of actually having to kill something really, really is a barrier for me. That's a problem.
Mm.
And again, I which makes me a coward and a hypocrite because I depend on someone else to do my killing for me.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. The idea of just seeing an animal going, well, I'm going to take your life from you now, just seems really fucked up to me.
It's one of those things that most carnivore humans are essentially just massive hypocrites.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm fair. Like, I don't mind admitting that. And that's not a knock against people who do go hunting. Again, if you're if you're a big game hunter, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
But if you're hunting for food and again, that's how it happens. You know, death is the mechanism by which meat arrives on our plates. So, you know, I can't cast any aspersions. I just can't bring myself to actually do it.
Mm.
I mean, I see our cats toying with a mouse and I get upset. It's like, kill the thing or don't kill the thing, you serial killer. Make a decision. And, you know, they're kind of batting it around back and forth. I think, man, you are a furry bastard.
Yeah, that is, that's why cats are on a different level when it comes to that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, no, cats are, watching a cat hunt is like your very own do-it-yourself episode of Mindhunter. This next story comes from our listener, Heidi. Since moving into our current home about 5 years ago, I've noticed things kind of passing through on occasion. The best way I can describe it is a kind of shift in the energy of the house and maybe some occasional noises. Once or twice I've had to ask them to leave, usually because it's waking us up at night. Nothing has ever felt threatening or malevolent, until last week. Last week around 11:30 p.m. I was just starting to doze off and heard something in the hallway outside my room. It almost sounded like someone walking down the hall toward my daughter's room in the guest room, but I wrote it off as just the wind causing some benign creaking or the dog settling down in the living room. A minute later, I heard our 9-month-old daughter start to fuss and wake up. I was hoping she would settle herself and fall back asleep, but no such luck. I got up to get her, and when I walked into her room, it felt weird. A kind of heavy and unwelcoming feeling that I've never felt in this house before. My daughter was standing in her crib, screaming, so I picked her up and tried to soothe her for a few minutes, but nothing was working. The longer I stood there, the more unwelcome I felt. The heavy feeling seemed to be concentrated in the corner of her room between the closet and rocking chair. My eyes felt pulled to that corner, but whenever my gaze settled there, I felt like I immediately needed to look away. I tried to convince myself it was my imagination, or that I was just psyching myself out for no reason, but I couldn't shake the heavy feeling that for some reason I needed to get out of that room right away. We went back to my room, and as soon as we were a few steps away, that heavy feeling lifted off my chest. I told my husband that I had an awful gut feeling that something in her room wasn't right and that we shouldn't be in there. Even though he's been dealing with my gut feelings for a decade, he doesn't usually believe me when I say things like this. This time he took me seriously because the dog started acting weird. While I was trying to explain to my husband that something was wrong, both dogs came barreling into our room and started pacing around the bed. They were worked up, shaking, panting a little, and trying to jump up on the bed. This is highly unusual behavior for them, so we asked if they needed to go outside. This would normally produce a lot of excited scrambling for the back door, but they just stood there staring at us. Taking this seriously now, my husband went to check things out while I stood there trying to get the baby back to sleep. Of course, he didn't find anything concerning in her room. Unfortunately, my daughter was wide awake at that point and ended up being awake for several hours. I reluctantly went back into her room a bit later to grab a blanket, and the feeling wasn't as strong, but still didn't feel right. My husband took the baby to the living room, and I tried to go to bed again, but my heart was still racing, and I couldn't shake that heavy feeling. I tried the white light trick you guys have talked about a few times. I started in the basement and mentally worked my way toward the back of the house where her room and the guest room are, but I just couldn't get the light to shine in those rooms, which has never happened before. Interesting. Normally, I don't have a problem asking things to leave, but this was very different. It instantly made me feel panicky and threatened. I felt like telling it to leave would just be taken as a challenge and make things worse. The next morning, her room felt completely fine, but that night seemed to be a catalyst, and since then, there's activity almost every night. The following night, I woke up around 1 a.m. and again heard something in the hall. I lifted my head off the pillow, dreading a repeat of the previous night's activity, but didn't notice anything. As soon as I laid back down, though, I heard a distinctly young male voice say, "Hey," from the doorway. Maybe it's crazy, maybe I was dreaming, but an image flashed in my mind of a 20-something-year-old man wearing a white tee, light blue jeans, sandy blonde hair, and a pleasant face leading into my bedroom. My eyes flew open, but of course nothing was there. Nothing felt menacing, so I fell back asleep. I'm certain our daughter notices the increased activity, because she's gone from sleeping through the night to waking at least once almost every night. When we're trying to rock her back to sleep, she'll lean over my arm waving, smiling, and chatting at the empty doorway. Almost every night she's so distracted, I have to say, leave her alone, she needs to sleep. Thankfully we're moving next week. Maybe all the packing and cleaning is stirring something up? I have no idea what's going on, and I'm a little anxious that whatever it is might follow us to our new house. So Heidi, first off, thanks for sharing. Again, I say this a lot, but I mean it. That sounds genuinely unnerving. And I mean, funny enough, I have had a similar experience to the white light thing, because obviously we do talk about that on the show as being a really good way to try and visualize yourself to a more stable place when these kind of things happen. But I remember back when we used to record in the old office, there was one particular day where I might have been just hanging out there with a friend. But I tried to do the same thing. I tried to do the sort of the white lights and kind of guarantee yourself some space. But it was almost like there, in my mind's eye, there was something sort of deking from left to right. If that makes sense, like you could almost imagine something kind of dodging as you were trying to do this. Hmm. And I was just about to mention this to my friend, and then they said to me, and again, I want to say, I can't remember if it was when we were recording the podcast, if I was there with someone else. I don't recall. But the other person said, yeah, I feel it too. It feels like there's someone just out of sight around that door. And I hadn't even pointed out where I was experiencing this feeling, but that's where it felt like to me where they had ended up. So it's interesting to note that's not a totally foolproof method, you know?
It's peculiar because it seems to have just ramped up in the last few weeks. And I know, obviously, Heidi refers to the fact that, is it the fact that they're packing that's done it? Is it a case of whatever's there doesn't actually want them to go, but it's got a very funny way of showing it?
Yeah. This is a real real need for a therapist situation, because if terrifying people into silence is how you express love, I mean, I've met that person. I think I've dated that person, but it is no way to go. I keep coming back to this idea that all these things we talk about are much less predictable than we like to think. You know, we like this idea that, oh, it's because we're leaving and they're acting up or whatever. But I think it's probably more impersonal than that. You know, we've talked a lot on the show before about how some of the stuff is seasonal.
Yeah.
Certain times of year, it's just more intense than others.
Mm.
And sometimes, too, I think we can maybe catch the attention of things. That, you know, maybe you're kind of on like a roadside stop for these things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, one thing stops. And so something else thinks, oh, well, you know, I see its car there. I wonder what he's doing. And they stop. But it's all really a transitory phenomenon.
Mm.
Heidi, I'd be curious to know if, since you've moved, whether or not you've had any issues. Because again, I'm fascinated to see whether it's something attached to you guys or, as I suspect, something more specific to the time and place. And this is actually a really good opportunity to say this. It's something I think that, you know, Ian and I used to say, and I think needs to be repeated here. We're not experts on this subject. And, you know, there was a ghost line call I was going to play, and as I was listening to it, it sounded really promising. But then the fellow said, well, I will give you all these stories I have, but you have to tell me how to solve this particular problem that I'm having with the paranormal. And we can't do that. Neither of us are experts. I mean, certainly we've had our own experiences.
Yep.
But yeah, we're not equipped to make those kind of calls. There are people who can suggest things that will help. Mm-hmm. And certainly, you know, if someone reaches out to us and we think we have someone who might be able to help you, we will refer you to that person, but we're not experts. I mean, Paul's a smart guy. He knows a hell of a lot more about this shit than I do. But even all that knowledge, it's not really a working knowledge of how to alter these things. It's more like data collection.
Yep. And I think all the knowledge in the world doesn't offer you solutions for situations like this. You know, as you refer to there, I know a lot about a lot of different types of phenomenon. I can't tell you what causes it. I can simply surmise or speculate. And I would never, ever try and tell people, well, if you do this, it will sort it all out. Because God knows what half of these things are.
That's it. You know, things we've talked about, I think even on the last episode, is this idea that if there is a subtle world, it is going to be as alien to us here as the real world was to us when we were in the womb.
Hmm.
There's just no way for us to predict what that looks like. And so I tend to think that, yeah, there's just no way to really know. And I don't want someone thinking that we are professing to be more than we are.
Hmm.
So, and that just seemed like a really good time to throw in a official Ghost Story Guys disclaimer.
Yes.
But yeah, so again, in my opinion, Heidi, and you asked, I don't know, but I'd be curious to know if it continues, because this kind of sounds like some of the things that would happen in our office, which was seemed to be a very transitory thing, but things would always come back. It would never go all the way away. So again, thank you for sharing, and please do let us know.
People of the Banyan. My family has been devoutly Catholic for several generations, and I myself was raised within the church. By the time I was a teenager, my parents had become prominent in our local church community. In fact, my father led a substantial prayer group, and they would often be asked to pray over the sick. Where I come from, exorcisms are more common than in most places in Western Europe and North America, and from time to time, my parents would be asked to attend one of these as well. One time, they were asked to pray over a woman who claimed that the banyan tree outside her kitchen window was haunted, because every night, between 1 a.m. and 3 a.m, she said, voices coming from the tree would wake her up. She said there were a multitude of voices, as if coming from a crowded marketplace, and inevitably, she would feel as though someone was standing right beside her. It was a threatening feeling, she said, despite the fact that her husband never shared the experience. The woman told my parents she had tried dealing with the problem on her own by saying a prayer of protection and sprinkling holy water around the banyan tree, but this made things worse. Rather than waking up between 1 and 3 the next night, she had a nightmare in which 3 men came to her and berated her for what she had done. They seemed particularly annoyed by the holy water. When the woman told them to leave her and her husband alone, it seemed to set them off, and they attacked, one of them choking her until she woke up screaming. To make things worse, when she next looked in the mirror, there was a red mark around the front of her neck. This is when she called our parents. According to my parents, the ceremony they performed, prayer and cleansing of the house and banyan tree itself, was unremarkable, and they came home assuming their job was done. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary until later that night, around midnight, when I dreamed of 3 men who asked me to follow them. Of course, I refused, but the men were persistent, and eventually my continued refusal drove them into a rage, and one threatened to kill my younger sister if I didn't go with them. I cried, I prayed, and when the dream men tried to grab me, they couldn't seem to come within arm's length of me, but I could feel their hatred and fury perfectly fine. I awoke screaming into a room where the air was much too heavy, and my hair was standing on end. I decided the best thing to do was to go see if my parents were awake to comfort me. Quietly, I stood and padded over to my door, where the air was somehow even heavier. I was only 3 steps outside my room when I saw, down the hallway outside my sister's room, 3 black figures standing there, as if they were trying to get inside. I screamed again and ran as fast as I could into my parents' room. Of course, that woke them right up, and they had just asked what was happening when my younger sister came running in screaming about 3 men who wanted to take her away. We spent the rest of the night in our parents' room. In the morning, my father told us he had had a dream of his own after going back to sleep. In it, he was met by 3 angry men. One of them introduced himself as the king of the colony of Rogon, to evil spirits, who live in the banyan tree. He claimed that first the old woman and then my father had disturbed his kingdom with their prayers, and that their holy water had ruined their belongings, making them impossible to sell at market. My father said they brought him into the banyan tree to show him the ruin he had brought, which he claims was vivid and unmistakable. Then he woke up, This was the last of those dreams, but for weeks we worried the men would return. It wasn't until the woman who had originally requested the blessing came to visit my parents and told them that the prayers seemed to have worked, as the haunting had stopped soon afterwards. Not only that, but since then, the banyan tree itself has mysteriously died. Well, that's a whole lot of no.
Oh, it's, yeah, no, that is oodles and oodles of no. If we're to accept that the people in the tree are actually real, imagine how annoying it would be. You're just minding your own business, doing your thing, and all of a sudden some jackass with a fire hose just starts spraying all your stuff. Imagine the human equivalent to that. Someone just kicks in your door and goes, I wonder what's in here. And just as you're about to answer, you're just putting your sandwich down so you can respond to this person, a virtual wall of water comes at you. I think I understand why they're upset.
Yes. It would be interesting if there's actually an incident that caused this to start.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I find it odd that these three shadow beings, spirits, or whatever they were, said that it was the holy water that had annoyed them. But had something happened before that? Because it seems a bit odd that they said, oh, well, why are you bothering us? And you'd be like, well, you're bothering her.
I mean, that said, I do know some shithead neighbors.
Yes.
My headphones that I use when I'm editing the podcast, they muffle everything in just such a way that everything my neighbors do sounds like World War WrestleMania. You know, like you're just sitting there minding your own business, you're writing ghost stories, you're listening to the new Rob Zombie album, and all of a sudden, yeah, it just sounds like someone's being suplexed through the drywall right next to you. And I mean, if it's my neighbors and they're having some crazy athletic sex, I mean, hey, good for you guys. But I don't think that's it. I you know, they're just loud and obnoxious. And actually, upstairs, I don't know if they've got a diamond drill or some kind of space blender, but you feel the vibrations through the floor from the kitchen. Like, I don't know what is happening up there. They're dismembering bodies or something. The notion of idiotic neighbors is not new to me. And while I am sympathetic to, again, for the fire hose scenario, I wondered, maybe they're just that. Maybe they're the equivalent of my mom's neighbors who like to have bonfires on windy nights and then can't figure out why she gets upset when they start throwing more pallets on it.
Yeah. Kind of people say, oh, look, they're putting the washing out. Let's start a fire.
Yeah, right. Oh, these houses are made of wood and it's windy and dry. I know what we'll do. Let's have a Wicker Man-sized bonfire. It's not enough to simply have a little fire and cook some marshmallows. Oh, no, we have to have something big enough to send Ragnar into the afterlife.
Yeah, I remember once living next to some neighbors. Thankfully, they were only there for about a year. And they did fireworks on Halloween, the Saturday, and then bonfire night.
Oh, dear.
And there's only like those two and this three-year-old child. And you're like, well, who are you doing these fireworks for?
Some people just generally need to seem to make noise in order to reassure themselves they exist.
Mm.
I mean, I think 9/10 of social media is just that. It's just people screaming into the wind, am I real? In the vain hope that the wind will scream something back. A blue circle and an orange visitor. This will be our final story for tonight. Over the course of a long, sometimes too long, life, I've heard many strange things. Some of them have been of the strictly human kind, people with features, proclivities, or hang-ups you don't see in Cosmo or even the back pages of the newspaper. Other stories are of the paranormal, where some poor soul has made the mistake of looking in the wrong place at the wrong time, catching glimpses of a world they can't begin to comprehend. These two stories fall into the latter category. The Night of the Blue Circle was in summer 2017. It was around 3 in the morning, and a young woman named Danica had just put down the Kindle on which she'd been reading a comic novel. The book had been so funny she'd needed to take a breather. Her bedroom was, inexplicably, without windows of any kind, something I'm not entirely sure is legal, but that's neither here nor there. And so once the Kindle screen was off, there was no light whatsoever. It was in this total darkness, as she was preparing to click the screen back on, that something that looked like a flaming blue circle of light rocketed towards her on the bed. Before she could react, the blue hoop collided with her, and she was unable to breathe. She described a feeling as though someone had simultaneously knocked the air from her while squeezing her heart. A harsh static and indescribable, painful noise, pitched at different levels, filled her ears. When the sensations passed several seconds later, Danica wept until she had no more tears left. On the other end of that spectrum is a story of the Orange Visitor, which appeared to Jeff T. in November 2005. In August of that year, Jeff had lost his father at the age of 54. Losing the man so suddenly, and really so young, was a blow to the whole family, of course, but Jeff's younger brother Mark had taken the loss particularly hard. From August to November, he dedicated every waking moment he wasn't at work to learning about the possibilities of life after death and the separation of consciousness from the physical body. He began to meditate, and eventually attempt to have an out-of-body experience. The family was atheist, and so this was met with patience and love, but not enthusiasm. And whenever the subject came up, his loved ones would feign interest as long as possible before their eyes started to glaze over. It was on the aforementioned evening in November that Jeff had his atheist point of view challenged. The children and his wife Melanie had all gone to bed, and he stayed up to read. Outside the window, Jeff could see the street lamps casting wan pools of light into the darkness, and he felt a chill. He rose from his chair and was walking down the long upstairs hallway that led to the bathroom, when he suddenly felt a strong urge to turn around. Doing exactly that, he came face to face with what he described as an undulating ball of orange light, some 5 inches in diameter. The orb hung in the air, inches from Jeff's face, for several seconds before curving around him and entering his youngest son's room. He followed and observed the orb hanging above the boy briefly before buzzing past him again and entering the other son's room. It hung there as well for perhaps 10 seconds before seeming to pass through the far wall. The entire experience had lasted 1 minute, at the most. Jeff was astounded and immediately went to the nearest clock to note the time, 11:32 p.m. The next morning, he told his wife Melanie what had happened, and she dismissed him, as often happens when people have experiences like this. She wasn't being cruel. There was simply no room in her world for such a thing. The following day, when Jeff came home from work, Melanie was waiting for him in the kitchen with a peculiar look on her face. He told me that unsettled was the word that came to mind. Melanie told him to sit, and after he had, he said that Mark had called earlier to leave a message. He said that he'd had the weirdest, most vivid dream the night before. In it, he had come from New Jersey to visit them in Oregon. Because of the geographical distance, Mark had never actually been in Jeff and Melanie's house, but she said that over the course of the phone call, he described the home exactly, right down to the color of the newly painted walls in the den. He also said he had seen his brother's face close up, but couldn't speak to him. Mark said when he woke, he looked at his bedside clock and the time had been 2:32 a.m., exactly the same time as Jeff had noted, just in a different time zone. The family remains atheist, but has been forced to accept the world may be much more complicated than they had originally allowed for. If they only knew. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey there, listeners. Before you reach for that skip 15 seconds ahead button, I promise you this isn't an ad. We wanted to take a minute to talk to you about mental health. On this show, I've always tried to be as honest and open as possible about my struggles with depression and anxiety, because even though we've come a long way towards acknowledging the very real damage these things can do, there is still way too much lingering stigma about reaching out for help. And when you start to feel like there's no help, it's easy to start feeling like there's no hope. But Paul has joined me today to remind you there is always hope and there's always help.
We're not going to try and talk you out of self-harming right now, because we know that's not how it works. Instead, what we wanted to do was tell you something now and hope that should things get bad, you'll remember it and make a phone call or send a text message before you make any permanent decisions. As someone who knows all too well just how important mental health can be, it's never too late to reach out.
In Canada, the number to call is 133-456-4566. In the USA, the number to call is 1-800-273-8255.
In the UK, the number to call is 116-123, or text SHOUT, that's S-H-O-U-T, to 85258. In Australia, the number to call is 131114.
However bad shit seems, it will pass. And no matter what your brain might be telling you at any given moment, and believe me when I say I know this intimately, there are people who love you and people who care deeply about how you treat yourself. Should a time come when you find yourself despairing, please know that we've both been where you are, and there is a way back to the world. Take care. Welcome back. Thanks, as always, to the rest of the team, Luke Greensmith, Anthony Germain, and Sarah Kent, for everything they do to make all this possible. You guys rock, and we couldn't do it without you. And, of course, thanks to my co-host, Paul Bestel, host of Mysteries and Monsters, the paranormal Johnny Carson himself. What's coming up on M&M this week, Paul?
We've got a Canadian paranormal researcher, Jason Hewlett, joining me this week, talking about his career and his documentary filmmaking, his latest book, and we talk about a few spooky locations in Canada and beyond. So yeah, it's a good little chat. Nice guy.
Well, he is Canadian,
and he lives in Kamloops as well.
Oh no shit. Okay, all right. That is Kamloops. That is close to home. Okay, that is weird. Thank you again, my friend, and we will see you next time.
My pleasure.
All right, we've already thanked our patrons, but if you'd like to become one of their number, head on over to patreon.com/ghoststoryguys, and from there you'll get access to all kinds of cool stuff. We have extra shows, physical rewards, bonus outtakes that are only available for patrons, and so, so much more. Again, that's patreon.com/ghoststoryguys. We have tiers at the $1, $5, $10, $20, and $50 levels, and we've got a great little community over there, and we would love for you to be part of it. If you want to get in touch, GhostStoryGuys@gmail.com is a way to do it. If you've got a story or a comment for the show, you can also find us on Instagram at instagram.com/theghoststoryguys. We're on Twitter and Facebook as Ghost Story Guys. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at LargerTheTruth. And you can find Paul at Paul Bestel on, again, Twitter and Instagram. We're also on TikTok as Ghost Story Guys. And there you will find a number of very cool, very creepy time-lapse drawings created by friend of the show Wanda Fraser. She's also the creator of the fantastic Dark Art series, which you will find at 4 p.m. every Friday over on her Instagram. Finally, if you want to get in touch but you don't feel like typing, you can always call the Ghost Line.
There's something strange in your neighborhood. We're gonna call Ghost Line. Call 1-888-588-6920.
Again, that's 1-888-588-6920. Or you can text at 925-553-4789. And how could I forget? Thank you to our listener Amber Pease for her fabulous Ghostline jingle. And if you want to contribute a jingle to the show, you are absolutely welcome to. Shoot us a message at ghoststoryguys@gmail.com. If you want to pick up some swag, stickers, or a signed copy of my book, A Strange Little Place, head on over to our website at ghoststoryguys.com and you'll find a link to our TeePublic, Redbubble, and Big Cartel stores, and from there you can find whatever your heart desires. If you do pick up a piece of merch, make sure to send us a picture, and we will post it across our socials. We love sharing that kind of stuff. It's always cool to see you guys wearing our gear. All right, what else? Ah, yes, of course. If you can leave a 5-star review wherever you can rate your podcast, it would be very much appreciated. After a pretty tumultuous couple months, things have finally started to stabilize and trend back upwards in terms of our download numbers, and that's really inspiring. That means a lot, not just to me, but to Paul, to Luke, to Anthony, and Sarah. Yeah, again, it's every download's a vote of confidence, and we certainly appreciate those. Big thanks, of course, to our musical guests, Fears of Abandonment. The song was Perfect on Paper from the album L'Appel du Vide, and you can find that everywhere you stream your music. If you've got a band whose music you think would be a good fit for this show, get in touch. Again, ghoststoryguys@gmail.com. Or you can shoot me a DM on Instagram, that works too. A reminder that I was on the Haunted AF podcast last week or 2 weeks ago, and had a really wonderful time, so make sure to check out that show. It was a great chat with those gals, and I hope to have another chat with them sometime soon. Maybe we'll figure something out. Our theme song, Radio, Into the Darkness We Go, is composed and performed by Peter of Pedzonta Music. Find more from him by searching for Pedzonta Music wherever you get your tunes. Our story's theme is The Future Belongs to Them Now by Hexagram. Find more from them by searching for Hexagram wherever you stream your music. That's Hexagram with 2 X's, not 3. Both those tracks are exclusive to this show, and if you want to get digital copies, those are available to patrons at the $10 level and above. Finally, all other music and sound effects on this show are provided courtesy of Epidemic Sound. If you're looking for pod-safe music or sound effects for your next project, head on over to epidemicsound.com to check them out. And I guess that's going to do it. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another show, and until then, into the darkness we go. Is because they can say whatever the fuck they want, and there's really no way to call them on it.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, well, if you stuff a bunch of candles up your butthole, then, you know, the demons will leave you alone. Well, oh, it didn't work. Well, you must not use enough candles, you know, or...
Yeah, that's always the thing, isn't it? Oh, but you've not done it right. Well, Nanny 38, that's what you've got to look forward to.
Hey, these are just white girl shit you read on fucking Tumblr. Like, you don't... know any more about this shit than anyone else.
It's the Instagram guide to witchcraft.
And he fires his 44 into the television.
Lemonade.
That and Kentucky Rain. When I was like 10, those were my jams. I was a fucked up kid, Paul.
Yeah, I can count the number of Elvis songs I like on about 3 fingers.
Which ones?
I don't mind In the Ghetto. I really like Bossa Nova Baby because it's dreadful.
I don't even know that one.
It's from a film, but it's just got a really strange Hammond organ in it. It goes... Bossa Nova. Bossa Nova.
All right. Okay. Jesus Christ.
Happy days are here again.
Yeah, right. Hey, yo, we're all going to fucking die. Everyone's sad. And you can find Fears of Abandonment anywhere. You stream your music, or you can pick up the album on iTunes. What was that?
That was Evel Knievel coming back.
Jesus Christ, you're not kidding. Holy shit. Sounded like a dinosaur. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, because there's nothing like driving down a main road in Sheffield on a super high-powered, loud motorbike at 9:15.
Well, it just sounds like he's riding on a constantly exploding bomb. How can I tell everyone I hate them without actually going door-to-door and doing that? I know. I'll put one of those fucking Screaming Eagle things on my motorbike.
Honestly, I can't read anything about him that doesn't make me think, what an absolute dick.
Like I said, he's one of those guys. You're like, well, you know, it's because of the dark forces. Like, a friend of mine, her sister dated this dude who used to tell people that he was in Vietnam, that he was special forces in Vietnam. And during the Tet Offensive, he didn't even exist. And Crowley was just that guy. He just lived in a time when it was easier to assemble a cabal of other dipshits.
Just a dirty old pervert.
That's it. He's just a horny bald guy. I could be Aleister Crowley if I was more charismatic. That's it. I just... It's the end of my rant.
You need to open yourself up to the light.
Oh, fuck.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.